You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Samuel gets it. Trent Williams out in front of him. Ayuk blocking. Debo. End zone touchdown. What a play. No flags. Another one for San Francisco. Blitz off the edge. Ayuk has got his second. Touchdown 49ers. Here's Kittle. George Kittle. Touchdown 49ers.
So many touchdowns to choose from. We couldn't get to them all. 38-10, the San Francisco 49ers drop a hammer on the Cardinals. They outscored them 21-0 in the second half of this game. By the end, we had Trace McSorley and a man named Brock Purdy in the game. We've also got a man named Jason Zumwalt on the show tonight. I'm Greg Rosenthal. We're going to get to six Yak Bros, all-time Yak Bros later in the show, yards after catch receivers that I've enjoyed watching. But first, we're going to make poor Jason discuss a game in which his team, the Arizona Cardinals, lost 38-10. And if you're not familiar with Jason, just listen to the start of every show on our Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday shows. You'll hear his voice. It's the voice of God, Jason Zumwalt. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm at a tipping point in my life right now, Greg. I got to be honest with you. It's difficult right now being an Arizona sports fan. Not that it's ever not been difficult being an Arizona sports fan. I get in this argument with Dan a lot, you know, who has it worse, you know. He has a Super Bowl. I don't care if he wasn't alive when it happened. His team has one.
No, that doesn't count. It doesn't matter if you're not alive. But, yeah, that's a fair point. You are wearing an Arizona Cardinals scarf and an Arizona Cardinals winter hat. I believe you've traveled to Boston, and you're doing this in your in-laws' house close to midnight. So, once again, yeah, thank you for reliving this pain because it was ugly.
Yeah, it was. It couldn't have been more ugly. It was a nightmare. I guess like the most you can hope for when you have your backup playing behind nothing but backups on the offensive line is that you're not totally embarrassed. And then, like, you know, if you're lucky, you win. Well, this was like falling down the stairs with your pants down around your ankles and your butt out in the moonlight, landing face first in dog poo. This was embarrassing.
I mean, it was close terrible. In the first half. It was 17-10, and all the stats actually were even. Really, the difference in the first half of the game was James Conner weirdly going for a one-handed catch on a pass that he didn't need to, and that turning into an interception. Other than that, you know, you kind of saw the Colt McCoy feistiness that they're moving the ball down. They forced a couple punts early from the 49ers, but then the 49ers wound up scoring six times in their next seven possessions for a total of 38 points. Most of them were touchdowns. It was embarrassing. The Cardinals defense had no shot. We will get to what it's like being a Cardinals fan and where the Cardinals are right now because it's ugly. They're 4-7. If we didn't fork them before, I don't remember if we did or not. We can fork them.
They have a fork in their back.
Okay, you remember. Yeah, they have a fork. The Hard Knocks episode is going to be ugly. But I make the mistake of asking a guest that's a fan or covers a team on pretty often on this Monday night show, and every single time that team has lost, and then the fans of the winning team complain that we didn't talk about the relevant team. And in this case especially, the 49ers are truly the relevant team. So we're going to talk 49ers for a while and what they're looking like. It's crazy to me, Zumwalt. I know you've watched this team a lot. You're a big NFC West guy, and they're a pass-first team right now, which is weird. I know they traded for Christian McCaffrey, and Elijah Mitchell had some nice runs tonight, but they're a pass-first team, and it's a very concentrated pass-first team. Only four players on the 49ers caught passes tonight. George Kittle goes 4 for 84 and 2 touchdowns. McCaffrey kills you in the passing game. He's just kind of the check down guy. When Jimmy G can't find an open receiver, you find McCaffrey for 7 or 8 yards. Debo Samuel had 7 for 57 along with that long run. And then Ayuk had 2 touchdowns. It's crazy to me that I think moving forward, even though they tried to get rid of Jimmy G, they are going to be balanced at worst and maybe a pass first type of team because of the talent that they have.
You know, at one point I was just kind of watching the game and I was like, ha ha ha, Brandon Ayuk, ha, ha, he's great. I remember when he was an Arizona Sun Devil in the same neighborhood as the Cardinals. And what did they do? Who did they pick up instead of Brandon Ayuk? Oh, is Isaiah Simmons. Yay! We have failed again. Yeah, the 49ers are an absolute beast. And you did bring up that it looks, you know, it was like, oh, what could happen here? The Cardinals look feisty. There's Colt McCoy. He's slinging it. He's getting it out fast. And the guys look lively. It was that pass to James Conner where everything just, like, the wheels just came off the bus.
But something would have happened regardless, because I think if you played this game 10 times, especially at altitude, where it just felt like the Cardinals ran out of gas and the 49ers had been training at altitude, I think that was a smart move by them. But it does. I don't think any of that matters, because Vance Joseph's done a good job scheming against the 49ers over the years. You can't blame it on the coaches. They've actually won 3 out of the last 4 against the 49ers over the last couple of years, sometimes with undermanned talent. I just don't think this Cardinals defense has enough good players. And I think right now the 49ers are almost in like early October if they were a normal team, because they've been waiting for this offensive line who had no experience to come together. They've been waiting to get healthy. They bring in McCaffrey. Garoppolo, you know, didn't start to start the season or have a training camp. And it's almost like they're just starting to figure out what they can be. And what they can be is an offense that gets the ball out of Garoppolo's hands quickly, and then someone makes a play after the catch. The Cardinals did not want to tackle these guys. The effort on the second Kittle touchdown was embarrassing. But even on other plays, like, it's just hard to get these guys down. And I don't think that's a Cardinals problem. I just think that's going to be a problem for everyone the 49ers play.
It just felt like the whole time, even in the first half, when the 49ers and were kind of playing even with the Cardinals, that at some point they were just going to pull away. It just never really looked to me like the Cardinals really had a chance here. And I don't know if it had anything to do with the altitude. I was upset when I found out that the Cardinals didn't show up to Mexico until I think yesterday. Like you said, the 49ers were in Colorado this whole week practicing. There's like little details that go into this that, you know, you can say you can't blame the coaches, but at the same time, it's like, why weren't they in Colorado? Why weren't they up in Flagstaff? I mean, come on, that's like 2 hours away from you guys. Like, it was just
good Arizona knowledge there, Zamal.
Topography.
I was trying to think of the perfect word for it. I couldn't come up with it, but only you would know, like, where's the altitude Arizona place to go to. No, the Bidwells, that just doesn't seem like something they would do. That doesn't seem like something Cliff Kingsbury would do. I mean, you can definitely blame coaches in that. I think the Cardinals are an inferior coaching staff, and they're not run as well in terms of finding players that fit their scheme. Sticking with the 49ers, like, when they drafted Ayuk, I didn't quite see it. And then you watch him do the route that he did on that first touchdown, and you're like, wow, this guy is so talented. He didn't even need to make plays after the catch. And you find all of these guys that fit a certain mold, and Kyle Shanahan knows how to use them. And McCaffrey fits into that mold. And for the second straight week, he wasn't even the leading rusher in terms of attempts or yards. That was Mitchell, who went 9 for 59. They didn't even need to run the ball that much. Debo had that 39-yard run that was just perfectly drawn up and perfectly blocked. And you've got, you know, the backup tight end Croft, you know, making plays down the field. They're just really well coached in terms of their blocking scheme, and the talent is the best, I think, that the 49ers have had. And it's hard not to watch them and think they're better off with Jimmy, and that this version of Jimmy is back to the 2019 type of version because he doesn't have a bum shoulder, and it's back to the 2017 or 2019 version because he doesn't have to do much. Like, that offense has very specific answers. I used to do a show with Andrew Hawkins, who was in that offense under Kyle Shanahan, and he's like, they just want quarterbacks to not make any interpretation. They're not doing choice routes for the receivers where they can get – it's like, this is the right place to go to the ball. One, two, three. If it's not there, just eat it, and just, like, don't improvise at all. And you could kind of see how good Jimmy Garoppolo is in the system on that touchdown to Ayuk. Maurice Jones-Drew thought that was the fourth read on that progression, and he got to Ayuk in about 2.5, 3 seconds. So Jimmy G's not a top 10 quarterback, but he is good at some things, and he's been in this system so long that he can beat up kind of an overmatched Cardinals defense.
Well, look, when he has all the time in the world to, you know, just sit back there and go through four reads, you know, eventually something's good.
But it wasn't even that long. He got to it in like 2.5, 3 seconds. I think that was what was amazing. But you're right. The Cardinals have not had any pass rush whatsoever all year. J.J. Watt is still their best pass rusher, I would say, on balance, which is not great at this point.
No, it's not great. I don't know, man. You know, it's just they just looked like a total buzzsaw tonight, and they just cut right through the Cardinals. And that second half was just, it just felt, like I said, inevitable. And it was just like this boulder rolling downhill, you know, and the Cardinals were doing their best to stay out of it, you know, and get their shots in when they could. But eventually that thing was just going to pick up steam and just smash us in the face. And man, it did in such an embarrassing international way.
Oh, that's true. Multiple countries. I know the UK audience was watching it on Channel 5 and enjoying the beat. The 49ers are a team, though, that I think have entertaining blowouts. I've been expecting this team to look like this more often this season than actually they have. And it's interesting that they've mostly done it in their division games, which you usually think like, okay, the other coaches know them well, but they've looked at their best in these division games. They blew the doors off the Seahawks in week two. They crushed the Rams both times. And now this game against the Cardinals, who generally have had their numbers. If you look ahead at their schedule, they have the Saints, then they have a tough three games, Dolphins, Bucks, and at Seattle. That's kind of the key part of the rest of their schedule. And then three forgiving games to finish, Commanders, who are playing better, and then at Las Vegas and Cardinals. They're at 6-4 now. Kind of where do you see them in the NFC picture overall? Because to me, I kind of look at them, the Eagles and the Cowboys, as the best three teams on paper. The 49ers are now tied for the division lead. They have the tiebreaker over Seattle, so technically they're the three seed. They'll have to go win the division, but I think that's very doable. And to me, I look at that schedule, and I don't see more than one, maybe two losses. And 11-6, 12-5 probably gets it done, as much as I love the Fighting Geno's up in Seattle.
Yeah, I would say minimum 10 wins. Minimum. There's no way they don't get 10 wins. So yeah, they're a beast. And I for one am sick of them not getting over the hump with this. I just want to see it happen. I just want to watch
it
happen.
You do as a division rival, you do, because I feel like this is a nightmare scenario for the Cardinals in many ways. It's also a nightmare scenario for the Rams. They just won a Super Bowl, and then they could watch their rivals go win one the next year. I really do think the NFC playoff picture has more than one contender, but I don't see anyone that should be seen as a higher favorite than San Francisco. I'd maybe give only the tiniest of edges to Philadelphia because they're more likely to have a bye, but that's it. Otherwise, on a neutral field, they seem pretty equal.
Well, okay, so they're built to win the NFC West, right? From the top to the bottom, they're built to win the NFC West. That's what they focus on. And they're two games away from sweeping it, right? Isn't that right?
Yeah, they have to beat the Seahawks again and
Seattle,
then the
and
Cardinals
one more time. So
the Cardinals
so really
in week 18. The only way the Cardinals are winning that game is if the 49ers are resting starters.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Maybe we'll get another win, Greg. It's just kind of forgot my point, but it's just okay. Here it is. The only thing at this point that is going to kind of get them off my radar and make me fear them less is a Super Bowl hangover. Does that make sense? I want them to win a Super Bowl and then suck the next year like the Rams did.
That's about as dark as it gets. You can hope for them to lose before
that's
that.
That's where I am right now. There's 38-10.
Yeah, they could certainly blow it again in the NFC playoffs, but the difference between them in most teams out there, but I would not put the Eagles and Cowboys in this mix, and we'll see. Seattle's got a long way to go, but we can see is they could win a game with a totally dominant offensive performance now. We just know that they could put up 35 on a bad defense, and there's not that many offenses like that. And they can win a game with a totally dominant defensive performance. I know they had the hiccup against the Chiefs, but Nick Bosa was getting after it tonight. Fred Warner's back to having a great season. They really know how to coach up players in the secondary. Charvarius Ward is, you know, suddenly a shutdown corner for them. But then they just bring in guys that you don't know well, and they fit them into their system. So they're big, they're mean, they're scary, and this was a game for everyone to realize that, yeah, they're 6-4, but they feel a lot more like a 7-3 or 8-2 team. Let's talk a little Cardinals, though, because they're a 4-7 team. And I feel like for most of the season, they've actually felt worse than their record. Now they're 4-7. Maybe it's caught up. They almost are more of a 3-8 team to me. I mean, because they won a couple of those games early in tough situations. They've signed Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim, who've made these picks that you're disappointed with through 2027. Kyler Murray's out again with a hamstring injury. It wouldn't be surprising if we don't see him until after the Cardinals bye, although this performance maybe, you know, gets them to push him to come back earlier. We'll see. Just like they're done for this season. Where are you at with this regime, which seems to be less and less promising every year?
It feels like they're not going to go away this year. It feels like they're all going to get called into the principal's office and yelled at the end of this season, you know, probably for the 15th time during this season. And their ass is going to be on the line one last time. They'll have one last chance to get this together. I just feel like they rode on their laurels, but based off of 7-0 and, oh, if, you know, Kyler didn't get hurt, and if this didn't happen, if that didn't, everybody's back healthy now, everything's going to be great, we're going to roll, guys. But they didn't count on the fact that the NFL will watch what you do and learn from it. Like the entire NFL just decided to not let giant plays happen anymore from quarterbacks like Kyler Murray. So he's having to throw everything underneath. He, you know, even when he gets away and breaks off, he can't get very far.
It's a dink and dunk offense. It's crazy to imagine them resting on laurels when they were a disaster down the stretch last year. You know, that embarrassing playoff loss, which you were at, yeah, right? Dan brought you as his guest. Do you think
I wore this scarf and this hat?
Do you think that was cruel of him? As my children were jumping in elation at Kyler just throwing a ball up with his eyes closed to a Rams defender to make it 21-0 in the first half. Do you think it was cruel for him to bring you to that scenario?
I think that Dan has a dark side, and I think we all know that. I think that if you look deep down in his soul, he wants nothing but to crush the people closest to him. And then be the man who brings them back up. He wants to be your destroyer and your hero all at once. That said, I think Dan was just doing a buddy a solid. And
yeah,
hey, it's
I
a
think
play
it was more of that. Yeah. I think it was more of that. But that was
let's
dark.
Not discount how evil he is.
That was a dark interpretation, but I enjoyed it. This Cardinals team, it's crazy. It's just crazy that they signed everyone long-term after that, and that they didn't just and people were like, oh, it was going to be a contract year. First of all, there's no rule against a middling GM going on a contract year. No one's coming after Steve Keim. It's fine if he's on the hot seat. It saves you money. Second of all, the fact that they made it for 5 years when they could have made it for 1 year or 3 years was wild. I want Steve Keim's agent. I don't know if he acts as his own agent. Maybe he does. A lot of those executives do. It it was crazy, and everyone first guessed it. And the crazy part of it is this Kyler Murray offense, and now that he's out again with the hamstring injury, I think it's a reminder that they're just kind of reliving the Cliff Kingsbury era and all of their seasons over in miniature this season. And here's how it goes. Well, we're going to try to not have Kyler just rely on his legs, and then we're just going to have Cliff's station-to-station offense that goes 5-6 yards per play that we think Colt McCoy can run just as well, but it's boring, and that actually doesn't really work. Then we're going to need at some point, because we realize we need it, Kyler to just start running and create, and then that'll start working for a while, and then he'll hurt his hamstring, and then we'll kind of be back in the same place.
You nailed it. I mean, that's that. Ooh, when they made those signings, when they made those signings, the first thing that popped into my head was 5 wins, 8 wins, 10 wins, and that's the only thing you're going to look at. You're just looking at the number of wins going up each season, and therefore we're trending in the right direction. Like when they put up the stat tonight with Kingsbury's win percentage, the first 7 games from Texas Tech and the Cardinals. And then after that, it was so startlingly close and tragic. I was like, what do you do, Greg? What do you do? How do you get to these people? I've looked at Mike Bidwell in the face. I've had the pleasure of meeting him. He's a smart man. You can tell he's a smart man. But I think that the problem is they get too close to the people around them. They are a family. And they have people come up. Steve Keim, he came up within the system. He was, you know, he was a part of that family for a very long time. And I think it's show friends versus show business. And they just don't know how to draw that line.
Well, you could see it on Hard Knocks. I've enjoyed this season of Hard Knocks so far. I think it might lose some steam in a couple weeks. I think this episode will be interesting to me, and then I might start to lose interest because I find the tension and the way you learn about a little bit what Kyler's like behind the scenes interesting. You see Keim up there, and he's the owner's best friend, basically. They're going through these games together, and you think about, okay, well, now you can see how he's lasted so long. But you mentioned the Isaiah Simmons pick and the Zaven Collins pick, and they've had a lot of injuries this year on the offensive line. They should be given some credit. It's just like it doesn't match up. I'm not sure exactly what types of players they're looking for on defense. I'm not sure.
I have a theory about that.
Okay, what is it?
It's called the tragedy of Darrell Washington. I think that was his name, right?
Yeah, he was a Pro Bowler and then not.
Yes. He was an amazing player. He was all over the place. He was our Mike. He was a stud. He had an amazing twitch.
Wes loved him some Darrell Washington. Loved him.
He was my favorite player. And then he had his problems with drugs and spousal abuse. And he was out and it was gone. And I think that Darrell was a part of that family. And I think ever since he's left, they have been looking for players like him, players that didn't really seem to be part of a mold. First, they went for Hassan Reddick, right? A guy who didn't look like he should be an edge rusher, but he had all of these other skills. So they wanted to put him all over in different places. Then they went after, there was someone in between him and Isaiah, Zaven Collins, who they just wanted to give the mic position to immediately, overlooking all veterans on the team. I think that something about Darrell Washington being taken away from them, they've been searching for that kind of magic ever since. And I think maybe they thought they had it with Honey Badger for a while.
Deion Buchanan, I think, is the guy that you're thinking of. And you could throw in Kim Dice, not one of those type of players, but was kind of
Kim
a player.
Kim Dice is actually one of those players because he was different. He was different. He thought differently.
Right. And Buda Baker would be a good example of one that actually hit that also fits this profile and is their, you know, best player on defense, I would say, now. But you're right. These first-round picks under Keim, did he take Jonathan Cooper or did he start with Deion Buchanan?
He did. Wait.
Either way, DJ Humphreys.
He took Deion Buchanan, and he was another one. He's another one that was exactly like that.
That's what I'm saying. DJ Humphreys, who's worked out. Good pick. Not amazing, but good pick. Kim Dice, Hassan Reddick, who they didn't know how to use and has looked better away from Arizona, Josh Rosen, Kyler Murray, Isaiah Simmons, Zaven Collins, and Cliff Kingsbury. I mean, that's Steve Keim's pick, too. And I just don't see Cliff as a guy who's ever going to kind of get out of his own way in terms of being able to be flexible, to match up to specific opponents and come up with different game plans. He does what he does. He fits players into different slots. That's why they look much better with DeAndre Hopkins. Everyone would, but it's like they need that. Yeah. It was almost like watching Greg Dortch tonight go for 9 for 103. It's like he's clearly one of your three best receivers on offense. Why can't you figure out how to have him on the field while Rondale Moore is on the field? You're the only coach in the league would be like, what? You can only have one of those types of great slot players. But it's because he has this sort of static offense, which operates the same way each time. And he's like, well, if Rondale's in, that takes up the Dortch role. Whereas any other coach would be like, I have no receivers. I need to get both of these guys on the field and figure out how to use them together and change what I do. And he doesn't change. And that's why I think there's actually a chance Cliff won't be back next year, because Kyler's not going anywhere with that contract, obviously. And maybe they give Cliff another year, depending on how the rest of this year goes. But I think they're going to want to see Kyler in a different offense at some point. That's all. That's my thought.
Yeah, it is scary, though, when it comes to losing Cliff, because Cliff does see Kyler as being kind of the prototype version of the quarterback that he wants. And in some ways, I think the worst thing that could have happened for Cliff as the head coach of the Cardinals and the play caller is Kyler getting hurt and Colt McCoy stepping up and playing as well as he did last week, because he played to a T Kingsbury's offense.
But he played fine. Like he gets rid of the ball quickly. He did a good job of that tonight in the first half, making some plays on 3rd and 7, going to the hot receivers when Kyler, who knows if he would have done it. He's had great games against great 49ers defense in the past, so I'm not going to say Kyler couldn't have done that. He would do it with his legs. But I think you see the limitations of that. It's 5 to 6 yards per attempt, whether it's Kyler or Colt McCoy, and you saw tonight the well kind of ran dry there in the second half. They didn't have any points. This is depressing. I got to stop having, fans or reporters covering the losing teams after they lose. I mean, you're a happy guy. You've done a great job on this show as a voice of God, literally. Jason Zummo, what fine acting that was, by the way.
Thank you. It was more like it kind of was channeled through me, to be honest.
Yeah, it really
like,
wasn't.
I wasn't really there, man.
Right, it wasn't acting. Before I let you go, we're going to talk about, in honor of the Yak Bros who played tonight. And that really is a nickname. Dan and Mark thought I made it up. No, Deebo Samuel made it up himself back in 2020. Him and Brandon Ayuk were going to be the Yak Bros. I did not make that up. We're going to talk about 6 of my favorite Yak Bros in the history of the league. Really the history since I started covering sport last 20 years. But before that, I did want to ask, like, you used to live with Hanzus. You're on his podcast now, but he's not here. Just do you have any fun stories or anything you want to just share about Dan? And maybe don't bury him as hard as you did before.
Well, you set me up for that, so I had to make it entertaining.
What was that? What was that, Justin? Justin's here, by the way.
Sorry. Hey, Justin.
Feels good to hurt your friends.
Sorry. Wait, is it Justin? Is that his name?
What was that?
Justin?
Ooh, always feels good to hurt your friends.
Oh!
Perfect.
What's up, Zeuser?
Thanks, Justin. That was a perfectly timed drop.
Yes, it only had to be hit 5 times before it worked.
I figured you could edit it out in post.
Now I can.
All right, yeah, give me something Hanzus related, then we'll get you out of here. You got to go to bed.
All right. So this is actually something that I just recently told Dan, and this is actually a total compliment. What I think is fantastic about what Dan does on your show is who Dan is entirely, 100%. From the very first time I listened to the Debate Club with just him and Mark, I was like, oh, wow, this is something. I don't know what it's going to be yet, but this is something, because Dan is doing the exact same thing he did when I lived with him. He's just holding court. He's handing off the conversation. He's guiding the conversation. He's just being kind of the Frank Sinatra in the room, and he's just kind of running things. Like, if people want to know what Dan is like, just listen to the podcast.
That's a great point.
It's who he is. This show is who Dan is. And I think, to your credit, it's become who you are as well. I think that you have blossomed into this amazing broadcaster. Listen, here are your flowers, man. Let me give them to you. You guys are,
we're getting
I
rid
love
of flowers.
You guys.
We're getting rid of flowers. It was suspended for 2 weeks. No flowers.
I love you guys. And you're just killing it.
Thank you, Jason. You're too
I'm very
nice.
Happy.
And it's been great to have you on this. Hopefully not too depressing. I'm going to bring up a good memory of yours quickly, because I thought this game, we got all the yards after catch guys on the 49ers, and I thought Cardinals, and I thought Anquan Boldin. And I thought Anquan Boldin is, I think, my single favorite receiver of all time that wasn't on my team. That was my single favorite player when I started to cover the league, which was in 2003, that came in after that point, and it wasn't too soon after. He jumped in with that like 200 yard game as like a relatively unknown rookie right off the top, and was like the fantasy pickup of the century as a rookie. And the way that he played football, certainly the way he carried himself, and when I got to cover that Super Bowl, and I absolutely fell in love with that Cardinals team and Darnell Dockett and everyone else on that amazing team, and was I was never more heartbroken about a Super Bowl result in person other than Patriots losing as I was for that Cardinals team. But it was partly because of Anquan Boldin. The way that he played football week after week was just an absolute joy to watch. He's an all-time Cardinal. He was your guy, and he's my number one yak bro of all time. I'm going to give it five more quickly after this, but I'll let you honk about Boldin before I do that.
There's really no one that I've ever seen kind of play the game like him. I think the closest thing I've ever seen was Andre Johnson. Was he a Texan?
Yeah, I thought about him for this list. Little different style, but I know what you mean.
The difference between him and Anquan was just there was just a little something with Anquan. He got that ball and he had the physicality like Andre did. He could bowl you over, but Anquan would do it with juice. He would just send you flying. And when he got that ball and he hit that and he hit those yaks, oh my God, he was a monster.
And he just ran guys over. He was always the guy people brought up that 40 times don't matter. He ran a 4.71 40, and you would have never known that on the field. He was just an absolute beast. If you didn't watch Anquan Boldin back in the day, get some highlight films.
One sec. Broke his jaw in a game. Played the next week with it wired shut.
And as great as Larry Fitzgerald is, and he would have had the touchdown, game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl for all time if the defense had finished that off. It was Anquan, and I'm sorry to bring that up, but what a team that was. One of my favorite. Anquan Boldin was the guy that was the heart of that team and had an all-time playoff run as well. The two of them together were just amazing. Five more quickly is my colleague, but also Chris Wesseling's probably favorite receiver of all time, Steve Smith. I don't know if he knows his colleagues, but Steve Smith absolutely makes this list. Kind of fits with Boldin as just an angry runner. Brandon Marshall gets forgotten a little bit in this discussion, but just an absolute beast,
stud.
Especially early in his career before all those surgeries, just an unbelievable player to watch. Young Julian Edelman, not the one who was picking up catches and winning the Super Bowl MVP, which was a little later in his career. If you go back and watch him early in his Patriots career as a punt returner and making plays after the catch, he was an incredible player. I got into so many arguments with Wes early in his career saying peak Edelman is already better than peak Welker, and I still believe it. His first 5 or 6 years, he was just incredible. Torrey Holt is another name I'm going to throw out here. Just so smooth, a different type of yak bro, but my God, did he have a feel of where defenders were coming from and how to run routes. It drives me crazy that is Isaac Bruce in the Hall of Fame? I don't even know. But he gets further.
Come on.
He gets further in the Hall of Fame debate every year than Torrey Holt, which is just mind-boggling to anyone watching those teams. Torrey Holt deserves to be on this list. And then I wanted to throw in one current player, Chris Godwin. I know he's coming off the injury, and he's not the same guy right now. But the way that he plays football, I think is very reminiscent of a young Anquan Boldin. And I'm always looking for those types of players and him coming into the league. And I think he'll get it back. He's just overcoming an injury. Chris Godwin deserves to be on this list too. And Justin wants to talk.
I just want to let you know, Justin. Isaac Bruce was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2020.
How did I not know that? I even watched these things. That was during the pandemic. We're not supposed to have to remember.
Yeah, we were all baking bread and staring at the wall waiting for this to end.
Yeah, hopefully our listeners aren't just waiting for this to end. This was a treat, Jason. Thank you for working overtime. I know it's late. You got to get to bed. I'm probably driving your in-laws crazy. And I got a concert to get to. I got tickets to the Flaming Lips. I bought the tickets in 2019. The concert was supposed to be in March of 2020 at the beginning of the pandemic. It has been delayed 6 or 7 times since then. It is tonight. It has already started, but I'm going to catch like the last hour, I would say, of it if I get out of the studio quickly enough. This is like, hey, We won over COVID. Oh, no, wait. We haven't at all. But I am going to enjoy this concert. I'm going to enjoy
this
concert.
What are you doing
here,
man? Go see the Flaming Lips.
Okay, let's go. Let's go. For Jason Zumwalt, right. It's been a pleasure. And Justin Graver. And Dan Hansis. What a guy. What a host. Mark, why don't we just thank everyone? Seriously, Jason, this was a treat to have you on.
Hey, thanks for having a fan on.
Heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.